It is always exciting to find out what the musicians of Malwick are up to. The group is a professional chamber music ensemble performing in and around Schenectady, New York. This morning, we find out about their productions of Alida or The Flight of the Suffbird Women. It is an opera in one act by Max Kaplan, commissioned and produced by musicians of Malwick, and paired with The Burden of the Ballot, an original one-act play about Albany's anti-suffrage movement, by Krista Dennis. To tell us more, we welcome Anne-Marie Schwartz, director of the Musicians of Malwick, composer Max Kaplan, and stage director, and creator of the opening play, Burden of the Ballot, Krista Dennis. It's a great pleasure to have you all here. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
Very nice to have you here. Welcome.
Lovely to be here.
All right, let us begin with you, Anne-Marie Schwartz, and tell us about how this all came about.
So about 2 years ago, Musicians of Malwick produced its first suffrage concert. And in the research for it, I happened to stumble onto a New York Historical Society blog about suffbirds. And it sort of piqued my curiosity because what in the world were suffbirds? And there were wonderful pictures of these women preparing to take off in a bicycle with wings, with a banner that said, "Women want liberty too." And they were planning to bombard Wilson's presidential yacht with Votes for Women pamphlets while he was anchored in the New York Harbor. And I thought, wow, what an amazing story. This would make great opera material. And at about the same time that this was revolving around in my head, I played a senior recital at Union College. Musicians of Malwick always plays the composition class recitals at Union. And Max Kaplan was one of the featured composers. I was absolutely blown away by the quality and the maturity of his music. And I started thinking, maybe he's my man. And so I approached Max, and the rest is kind of history. He didn't walk with the project. He ran with the project, and he did amazing research on it. He contacted the families. He wrote the libretto. He had to create the book that goes with the opera. And he, of course, wrote the music. And I think that he has done a superb job.
Nice. What would you say about that?
I was thrilled when Anne-Marie contacted me about doing the opera the summer after I graduated, because I've been into opera since I was about 12. My sister and I actually used to enact The Barber of Seville for family and friends with stuffed animals.
Hey, I didn't know that.
And so getting a chance to try this out so early on, I was excited about. And
What was the species of the animals that were stuffed?
Oh, all sorts of different animals. There were dogs.
Dogs, wolves. Excellent. All right. All right.
I love that. And the subject matter resonated with me on a personal level, too, the whole idea of activism. I've had a little bit of involvement in the animal rights activist movement here. And just the contemporary relevance of the women's rights movement and how that's become more and more relevant over the last 2 years we've been working on it.
In writing something like this and having being commissioned basically and saying, okay, this is what we want, what kind of conversations do you have with the group and going back and forth, or do you just go into the lab and let the magic begin?
She pretty much left it to me to do as much historical research as possible, kind of familiarize myself with the people involved and the story, and try to find a personal angle that would lend itself to a musical representation. And then we've been kind of fine-tuning it with the acting and the stage directing to try to get across the feeling that we're going for.
What has that been like?
It's been a fascinating process. And I think one of the things that you have to realize about setting a true story to music and sort of jumping into the middle of an action is that you have to get the audience to be able to identify with the characters. So how much backstory do you give? How much do you conclude the action after the actual sort of scene takes place? And how do you get the audience to emotionally commit to these characters? And so I think for me, watching Max kind of develop this whole scenario and how it was going to work, how many characters he would use in the opera, how they would interact, has been a really interesting process, and it's been fun to watch him kind of evolve with it.
How long is your opera?
It's about 50 minutes.
50 minutes. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, that seems right, right? I mean, that can have a nice arc to it.
Yeah,
then.
For one act.
Yeah. And what has it been like to you to see it come alive from coming from the page to actually this process that you're in now of seeing it start to take shape?
Well, I've been surprised to figure out just how little of an opera is actually the composition and how much is what the performers bring to it, the stage direction.
So another way of saying that is how much of it is out of your hands?
Well, I think we have to trust each other a lot. I have to trust the sympathy of the performers, and I have to trust them to understand what I'm going for, and they have to trust that I've calculated everything all right.
And how do you, and if they're not, then how do you bring that across and say, oh, okay, that's not what I meant?
Well, I try to stay out of it as much as possible. Leave it to the experts.
They've
been doing a wonderful job. So.
And he's really receptive to feedback, which has been great for us because we've presented scenes of it. We've had some rehearsals, and we can say, Max, this works really, really well. Or maybe you want to rethink that a little bit. Maybe this doubling here is a little overpowering. And so it's been a collaborative process as well. And he's been, I think, particularly receptive to hearing the performer's own thoughts of how various aspects are working.
So, Krista Dennis, tell us about Burden of the Ballot.
Burden of the Ballot is a one-act play that I wrote about the denizens of historic Cherry Hill down in Albany, the Rankin family. They're very, very interesting people, and Emily and Catherine Rankin, around the same time that the opera is based, were staunch anti-suffragists. So I was really interested in figuring out why on earth women would vote against, would go actively work against their own enfranchisement. What was that all about? So I did a lot of work in the archives at Cherry Hill, finding out what made these people tick, and sort of wrote a short play that's essentially a garden party gone wrong, in which the antis and the pro-suffrage ladies have a bit of a chat. It's relatively civilized. It's interesting. Albany was largely an anti-suffrage city, and Schenectady was largely pro-suffrage, based on the fact that Schenectady was a working-class city, an industrial city, and Albany had some very powerful players with very loud voices in the Prynes and the Rankins. And all of those fine families, Schuylers, Van Skyck, and the whole gang.
I was just going to say, there's some amazing characters that you get to work with there.
Oh, yeah. It's fabulous. It's so much fun because the play sort of writes itself.
Tell people that. Take all the credit, for God's sakes.
Indeed. Anna Fenn Prynne wrote these outrageous letters to the editor on a regular basis about why suffrage would lead to chaos and communism and just the fall of the United States as we know it. But they had just seen that happen in Russia. They had just seen the Russian Revolution occur. And I think the big families were kind of shaking in their shoes in Albany about that.
So how does a play fit into coming in after the opera, and how will the evening unfold?
So we actually open with the play, which is also
play
a one-act play,
mm-hmm.
and it sets the stage kind of because it is the same time period, and it's showing sort of the other side of the suffrage movement, and we have these wealthy Albany women who are opposed to suffrage, and then we have these amazing women in New York City flying this plane and over the New York Harbor on a December night with gale force winds. They crash, but they're okay. But their bravery and their commitment to the cause is really incredible, and it sort of sets the stage for many more things that are going to happen in the suffrage movement leading up to the ratification later.
Does this put you in, I guess this fits into the mission you've always had of Musicians of Malwick, of doing something that is bringing in new work, bringing ideas to the fore, exploring things.
And also bringing history to life
through
music, which I think is a wonderful way of engaging people in a different sense than they might normally get through reading a book or going to a museum.
And that's worked well for the group.
So far, so good.
And I assume for the audience, because then they learn in the process.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we presented scenes on Monday night, the first really big public presentation of scenes. And the response was really, really thrilling. They clearly were engaged by it and enjoyed it very much and responded very well.
The idea of commissioning works, do you want to do more of this?
I would love to. I would love to. It's very gratifying personally to sort of take something from an embryonic stage to its birth and to work together with the other artists and really see a conception of it is really very satisfying.
And Max, what do you want to do? Do you see life with us after this performance or a set of performances?
Well, I would love to do more opera, especially of this historical nature, because it's so interesting trying to bring together history, which is so fact-based in a way, and the more emotional directness of mm-hmm. opera as a genre.
Do the facts get in the way of a good opera story?
I think the recitative was invented to get facts out of the way. So, yeah. But it's a matter of distilling it, maybe interpreting history a little bit, bringing out the most important facts.
Well, right. And we don't expect from an opera, I don't think most people would expect from an opera, you know, the absolute and say, oh, that's the way they sang that when they did that.
But at the same time, history provides a contextual richness that
yes.
you can't get from fiction because it's just...
And you went to school, where did you go to school?
I homeschooled.
Or okay. You mean,
Union College.
Union College. Yes. And in music?
In music and classics.
And so you would like to do more of this, I assume.
Yes, classics also being historically related, it made me interested in this kind of thing.
Yeah.
His next opera might be in Latin. You never know.
Wow.
That would be cool.
Are you all ready for that?
Not quite yet.
You're getting
there. We
have
to survive June 8th through 10th.
Yes. So for Musicians of Malwick, is this your then what goes on after this set of performances?
We go on vacation. No, it's our conclusion.
End of
the season,
and then you'll start up again in the fall.
Exactly.
And then this particular performance is being done in Scotia. Tell people where and how this venue came about.
So it's in the Glenville Business and Technology Park at a facility called Clink, which is this really cool bottle redemption site. And it's housed in an old Navy depot building where they repaired tanks during World War II. We were looking for sort of a cutting-edge techno site, and this perfectly fit the bill on so many levels. It looks like an airplane hangar. We found out about a month ago it has marvelous acoustics, which was a very welcome surprise.
Great.
And the team at Clink is just amazing. They have been equal collaborators in this, being not only interested and helpful, but really just making it entirely possible for us to perform there.
This amazing production runs June 8th through the 10th. You can find out more by going to musiciansofmalwick.org. That's M-A-A-L-Y-C-K, musiciansofmalwick.org. My thanks to Anne-Marie Schwartz, Max Kaplan, and Krista Dennis. Thank you all for being here, and have a wonderful time performing on
Thank
the
you so much.
8th through the 10th. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.